Ich bin Dr. Dania Schumann und ich heiße dich ganz herzlich willkommen zu The Science of Life, dem Podcast, der sich mit Themen aus der Ernährungswissenschaft, dem Ayurveda, Yoga, aus der Psychologie und Persönlichkeitsentwicklung beschäftigt. Lass uns gemeinsam unsere Fragen ans Leben mit Verstand, Herz und Humor betrachten. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Science of Life. In this episode, I have the pleasure of speaking to Laura Plum, who is a Vedic astrologer and an Ayurvedic health coach. And she graduated from the Kerala Ayurveda Academy and the American Institute of Vedic Studies. And she dedicated most of her life to the study of yoga, meditation, Vedanta, Jyotish, which is the Vedic astrology, herbal medicine, nutrition, and in general health and healing. And she also runs her own Ayurvedic courses and also courses that give you a deeper insight into the planets in astrology. And she wrote a cookbook, and she is just a very knowledgeable person and a great human being. And I'm really happy that I can share with you this interview about Jyotish, the Vedic astrology. And we talk about the doshas and the mind-body constitution in Ayurveda, how you can read that from a Jyotish chart, from your birth chart. We look into the planets and how they influence everything in nature, everything within us. And we also look at how they are related to certain events that happen. And especially now that we're in a very special time, we also look at the current circumstances of coronavirus, and we also look into how long this period may last and what it has to do with our dharma as a collective. This episode is packed with knowledge, and if you already know a little bit about Ayurveda and astrology, this will be a wonderful episode for you. If you just started to get to know about Ayurveda and Jyotish, don't worry, Laura explains everything in a very beautiful way, and I hope that you're going to enjoy this really interesting interview. And without further ado, I welcome Laura Plum to The Science of Life. Hi, Laura. It's so nice to have you here for the interview. Thank you for taking your time.
Of course.
And you are such an incredible person, full of wisdom. I've been following you for quite a while, and you're not only a health practitioner, you're also very accomplished in the Vedic science. You know a lot about Ayurveda and astrology. You give consultations, but maybe you want to introduce yourself a little bit more to the listeners.
Not so much. I'd rather introduce you. We just had such a lovely conversation before we went on to begin and here. And I love that we have these shared passions and love for the Vedic sciences. Really, I've been a child of nature, let's say, since a very early age, just really finding comfort and solace in being in the, what we might call the outdoor world or the natural world. I grew up very just a little short walk away from Lake Michigan, one of the Great Lakes, and used to spend a lot of time there every season. The winters there, you know, are very snowy and cold, and the summers are very warm and run around and play. I just say that because I came to feel that the lake was my mother, and just watching her through the seasons taught me a lot, but mostly really nurtured my heart. later when I discovered Ayurveda, I feel like I discovered the science of that experience. And I also remember being young and being kind of lying down on the grass next to my father. Maybe he had his arm around me, or maybe I had my head on his chest or something, and looking up at the stars. It's such a safe and comforting memory. He's died many years ago now, so it's a lovely memory to have of that feeling of being a child and being there with your father. And the world is not only safe, but the stars are shimmering in the night sky. And it's not just a world of safety in that moment, but of wonder. And both my father and I looking at the stars and just feeling like, wow, we belong to this really extraordinary mystery. And so again, when I found Jyotish, I feel like I found the science of that. And so these two great sciences, which I consider to be genius sciences for how to be a good human being, really, and how to live a dharmic life in harmony with natural law and cosmic law. You know, that's what I've devoted my life to, and it's always such a joy to meet people like you who are doing the same. It's as if we found the greatest jewel or the greatest treasure ever, and it's free and it's available to everyone, but not everyone knows about it yet. So here we get to do podcasts and write stories and try to help people come find it. Come along with us on this journey of magic and wonder, and health and healing and wellness and wholeness and unity and love and connection. That's what it really is.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful view on life, what you just said. And I think it's mostly that connection to nature and to really feeling what's around us, what's within us, that gives us like clues about our dharma or our purpose in life. And from what you just said right now, I felt like you did a lot of listening, and that brought you to what you want to pursue. And that's really beautiful. And so today I really want to talk about that passion of yours, Vedic astrology, and how it links to Ayurveda. But before we dive deeper into this, I would love you to tell us maybe a little bit about the difference of Western astrology and Vedic astrology. So for the listeners, I already had an interview with a really dear friend of mine who is an accomplished Western astrologist. And we talked about the beauty of Western astrology. So maybe you could give us more an insight about what distinguishes the Vedic from the Western astrology.
Well, first to say that I lived for many years in Europe, and while I was in Europe in my 20s and early 30s, I met various Western astrologers who were very accomplished and shared with me things about my life that were very helpful. So I do have a deep respect for it. We talk about astrology as being a science in many ways of symbols. One of my teachers says through Jyotish, it's almost as if we're seeking to approach the mind of God, but we will never have the mind of God. And so a lot of it is left to interpretation. Both Western astrology has, I think, great symbolism to be interpreted, great archetypes to be interpreted in ways that I think can be very, again, very helpful and beneficial to people. Jyotish is, the difference is that we call the Western system, we say it's based on the tropical system. It's a tropical system. It's based on the seasons. It's very earth-based in that sense. And the Jyotish or Vedic astrology is sidereal. It's based on the stars. That's an old term for a star-based system. Everything really is based on the earth and its relationship to the stars. And, you know, the people of Greece and the people of India were in some sort of an exchange for thousands of years. They were exchanging silks, gems, spices, right? Alexander the Great went all the way to India with his troops. came back with yogis, Ayurvedic doctors, Jyotish masters. So they were exchanging information. Jyotish has learned a lot from Western astrology and vice versa. But one thing that seems to be missing in the Western is that the Earth wobbles on its axis, A-X-I-S, that central line through the middle. That seems like it would be steady, but it has a bit of a wobble, and it's a very minute wobble. But what it does is it causes the Earth to move so that it seems like the sky has moved 1 degree every 72 years. In one person's lifetime, it would not be perceptible, right? It's 1 degree we wouldn't notice, even in one lifetime. But because the ancient sages of the Vedic period were great mathematicians, and they were marking things on the ground, marking shadows and marking signs, and you know, every day on April 21st, for instance, they could see this star would line up with that tree. They could see over time that the earth was, that the sky was progressing. And in the couple thousand years since there was this great exchange between Greece, the cradle of Western civilization, let's say, and India, that's moved 24.5 degrees. Now, every sign is 30 degrees, and there's 12 signs. So 12 times 30 makes 360, and that's the sky around us. We are talking about the solar system when we're talking about any form of astrology, but not the typical picture that you see when you get a picture of the solar system. We're looking at the solar system from the Earth. So we're looking at where all those planets are around us. It's what we can see with the naked eye. The sun in the daytime, and at nighttime we see the moon, and sometimes Jupiter, sometimes Venus setting. Recently, Venus has been setting with the moon. It's been very beautiful to see. And so the sky seems to move. It's actually us moving. It's moved. The sky has moved. It looks like it's moved 24.5 degrees. And out of 30 degrees, that means it's moved almost an entire sign. And the people of the Middle East and the East used to say that the year began when spring comes around, right? Of course, it seems natural that that would be a new year when nature is new again. And so that used to be when the sun went into Aries on April 21st or 22nd, which was the spring equinox. And that was the beginning of the new year. And so Western astrology pins Aries to that beginning of spring, that spring equinox. But if we actually look at what's happening in the sky, the sun does not go into Aries now until April 13th. Right? So it's 3 weeks later. And just about everyone, all the signs start 3 weeks later than what they do in Western astrology. And that's based on what's actually happening in the sky. And that's why Jyotish is so good at predicting events, because we're looking at the actual placement of where they are now that can help us determine how those influences will manifest in our lives.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And for those who wonder now what that specifically, for most people, I think not for all people, but most people, it means that their sign, their sun sign, shifts one sign where they are the previous, they shift into the previous sign.
Right.
So if you're a Scorpio sun, you will be a Libra sun.
Right.
So that, yeah, gives a totally different spin on it. So it's really interesting.
And I'd just like to add to that, because another major difference, two major differences about that, is that even if your sun sign has moved or not moved, we're also talking about your rising sign, we're talking about your moon sign. All the planets have the potential, 3/4 to 4/5, you know, of your planets will have moved. 3/4 to 4/5 of people on this planet will have different signs across the board. And that's the second thing that's important to know, that's a difference is, well, it's the third thing. One is that everything's moved. Two is that all your planets will have moved, not just your sun. And three, that we're not just looking at your sun sign in Jyotish. In fact, we don't emphasize the sun sign as much as it's emphasized in Western. It's a little bit more complex because you can't just go, oh, my birthday is this, let me look up when that, you know, what sign that makes me. Because even if you find that out, that's telling you just such a minor piece of who you are according to what we can see in Jyotish. We're very focused on the rising sign. We're very interested in your moon sign. We're very interested in the other planets, especially in your case, you have one of your planets is exalted, so that's a very important part of who you are. And in your case, I think, as with many people, they may have two or three planets in one sign. So even if they're not the sun or the moon, if you have three planets, let's say Venus, Jupiter, Saturn in one sign, or Venus, Mercury, Jupiter in one sign, that's going to make you really like that sign. That's going to bring a lot of power over there. Then we're interested in the houses that those planets are in. We're interested in the relationships of those planets with one another. It's a complex science, of course, yes. But it's very worth learning, or even at least having a reading of one's chart, because as you know, it's such a beautiful way of learning about your soul, your karma, your dharma, why you're alive, why you have the challenges you have, and what you're here to not only learn, but to be, what you're here to unfold.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very beautiful way of helping us align with our essence.
Yeah, it's true. I just started learning about Jyotish, and it has so much depth to it. And as you said, it's just so much more than the sun sign. It's sometimes even not the rising sign. It's like you said, you have like a planets in one sign, and that gives it a totally different spin, and such a beautiful way also to look a little bit deeper into your own constitution, which also brings me to the next question I have for you. And the beauty about Jyotish is that it's related to Ayurveda, so you can even read the Prakruti from a Vedic chart. And maybe you want to tell us a little bit about this one.
Sure. It's fascinating, and it's very helpful if you are an Ayurvedic practitioner to know something of Jyotish, because you can get more of a refined perspective on a person's Prakruti, as well as their, well, it can tell you so much. I mean, it can tell you their tendency not only towards imbalance, but also their capacity to follow or comply with protocols, their capacity to overcome illness, let's say. It can even potentially give you a sense of timing. All of the Vedic sciences speak to the idea that we are consciousness come alive. And Sri Aurobindo, a great, great teacher, would say that not only are we alive to know that we are consciousness itself, we are further alive to creatively participate in the creative evolution of consciousness itself, which is a very empowering concept. We're alive not just to meditate and go, oh, there's this silence within me that must be some, right? There's this witness presence inside of me. But actually to work with that, to refine and expand consciousness itself, it's very beautiful. So we can look at a person's chart and see if their consciousness will be able to work with them to bring forth healing. All of the Vedic science is beginning with consciousness, and consciousness progresses into the human being through the human nervous system, which is why yoga, which basically conditions the nervous system through mind, breath, and body being linked in movement, you're conditioning and strengthening the nervous system, right? So you're strengthening the human being and its alignment with it, consciousness itself. And in Ayurveda, well, consciousness is the healer. Who's the healer? Not the doctor, not the herbs. consciousness is the healer, and it's about strengthening that conscious presence and the flow of prana as the energy of consciousness itself throughout the body. And so that's why we can say that in the, even Ayurveda says the mind is such a key component of wellness and healing. And even Ayurveda will say that most illness, most imbalance, most disease begin with the mind. And prajnaparadha is when we interrupt the flow of intelligence, we interrupt the flow of wisdom, whether it's cellular wisdom or intuitive wisdom, when we don't listen to the wisdom that is within us, then we can have imbalance or disease. And so the beautiful thing about Jyotishchara is that not only can we see the rising sign, which I will speak to, which gives us Prakriti, we can also see the moon, or we can see, again, various relationships that will perhaps help someone. I looked at a chart recently of somebody who's, you know, at a superficial look, there's a lot of suffering, debilitated moon, debilitated sun, or not debilitated sun, but a weak sun, and issues that look challenging. At a superficial look, you might say, oh yeah, you're going to suffer. Because the person said, why am I suffering? So these people in this Facebook forum were like, yes, yes, you're just going to suffer. And but I was looking and I was saying, no, this person has a great capacity to be a great human being, a maha soul, a maha atma, because of the challenges of their life. But the chart itself was calling this person towards devotional practices. Mm-hmm. And if we allow him to live in a very material world, he's conditioned to be very materialistic, and we just say, oh, well, you're never going to be happy in that material world. And we don't actually say Jyotish is a spiritual science. It's a sister science to Ayurveda and yoga, and therefore there are spiritual remedies. Come along on the spiritual journey, and you will find yourself elevated to greatness. So just to come back to your question, I'm sorry I went on that diversion, but I think that's an important piece of what Jyotish is, and maybe a difference as well with Western. It is a spiritual science. It proceeds from the understanding that consciousness is the creative power, the creative intelligence. It's created all that is, yata pande, yata brahmande. And that greatness, that Brahma, is in even the smallest thing. Everything in creation is encoded with that creative power. And so Jyotish helps us to see it and to align with it. And now, in this time we're living in, what is the cause of this COVID that is this global pandemic? Well, we can go at the molecular level, but if we look at the sky and we look at the cosmos, we say, actually, it's adharmic living, and we have to restore dharmic living. And that's what I love about Jyotish, is that Jyotish can see the tendencies towards getting adharmic, a meaning not, dharmic, not living in harmony with nature, and it can see our tendencies and our timings that will help us get back into dharmic living. It's all about this, all about dharmic living as an individual and as a whole, the whole individual as a part of the whole being. So we look at the Prakriti, that's if we are consciousness come alive, we're gonna look at the first house. And that's, if you're looking at the North Indian style chart, that's the diamond that's at the top of the chart, pointing upward. Why is the rising sign the first house? Because the first thing consciousness is going to need to have a human experience is they're going to need a human body, right? They're going to need this vessel to go and have a human experience. So the first house is our rising sign, and it speaks to the human, your body, your mind-body constitution. I also think of it as it's the first house or the rising sign represents the earth, the planet Earth. So it's our earth body. It's what takes us out into the earth from our cave or our home, out into the world. What are we interested in that's going to pull us out? And then how do people see us? So it's our outer personality or our social persona. It can speak to a lot of who we are. Then we also want to look at aspects. We want to look at the planet that rules the rising sign, and is that strong? How is that doing? Is it able to protect the first house and keep the body strong? We can look at the sixth house for health. The sixth house can tell us a lot about health and digestion. And I think the moon is also very helpful, a little bit more in terms of mental and emotional, but it can speak somewhat to immunity. And but as I said, mental and emotional is going to have a lot to do with how well we ward off, you know, how strong are our defenses, spiritually, mm-hmm. mentally, emotionally, and how well can we overcome? You know, I have had a life of so much suffering, so I'm sensitive to it, and I have a lot of compassion for my clients and people. But I have seen how much it can grind you, you know, like the oyster into the pearl, or the pressure that turns a stone into diamond.
Yeah.
And that's what we're looking for in the chart, to see what a person's potentiality.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. You said so many valuable things, not only about Jyotish putting things into perspective, right? It's all about perspective, right? And we always have a choice. That's the other thing. We have to choose the choice how to see things and how to put them into relation, right? Do we zoom in, or can we see the bigger picture? And I think sometimes when you look at people who really become something great, you usually see a great deal of suffering mm-hmm. before they transform into something. And I think it's for many of us, the pain is such a beautiful thing to put us on the right path and to really shape us, as you said. And the only thing is, do we choose to suffer or not? Do we choose to suffer and stay in the place where we are, or do we choose to go through a transformation, to change things and to live up to our potential? And mm-hmm. that's something really beautiful you said there. And what I also hope is that a lot of people might get away from this dosha doctrine, right?
Yeah, it's amen.
It's not only vata, pitta, and kapha, right? It's just like when you look at, I mean, you can look at the body constitution, right? That could give you a vata, but then you see that this person has Mars exalted and Capricorn. And you can never say that this vata person will not finish a thing, because with Mars and Capricorn, hell yeah, you're going to finish something, and you have a lot of grind. And just for me, it gave me such a deep insight into that there's so much more than the doshas when it comes to a mind-body constitution, right?
Yeah. That's what I meant by it gives you that refinement. You can see, absolutely, and you've given it more refinement in terms of explaining it, that you have to also look at all the planets. So you're looking at the first house, you can look at the sixth house, you can look at the moon, and all the other planets. So yeah, you could be Kapha. You could be a 100% Kapha, and then you've got that Mars exalted. You're going to finish things, right? Whether it's Vata or Kapha, we might say Vata gets too distracted to finish, or the Kapha gets too cuddly, they're cuddling with their families and they forget to finish, whatever. But I went like this, amen, because I think that we're too willing to box ourselves in to a certain dosha. And of course, we could be not just one of the three doshas, but a dual dosha. Mm-hmm. Even in a rare case of Vata, Pitta, Kapha, more or less the same. The point is to learn these Vedic sciences as a way of taking responsibility for your life and managing what you've been given in the best way possible. And too often, and this is, I think, just a human trait, too often we use Ayurveda for more self-flagellation, for more self-denial, for more self-negating. And that's what gets me, because I feel like, you know, there's this idea in the Christian tradition to never use God's name in vain. And I feel like it's that. I feel like you're using a divine science, a divine practice, a holy genius body of knowledge that's been given to us by these great sages. It's been carried through by these great, generous teachers. And we are so blessed to be recipients of it. Thank you to India, and thank you to all the great sages, and thanks to all of our great teachers. That it's incumbent upon us to use them only to uplift, even to uplift ourselves. And never to say, oh my God, I'm so vata, you know. No, this is wrong. I just feel like that's wrong. Never to use, well, I would think it's wrong to ever, as one of my teachers would say, never use the word against yourself. Because you're a divine holy being, whether or not you know Ayurveda. But especially don't use the Ayurvedic terms to put yourself down. That's what I find happens too often. It's about lifting ourselves up. It's about learning tools for managing our lives. And if we are having a very vata moment, we can say, oops, I'm having a vata moment. There I go again doing that cute little thing of mine. And now here's what I can do to restore balance.
Yeah, totally. And I think what you just said, like about using Ayurveda as an excuse, I think that's also what most people criticize about astrology. They say, oh, now you have a legitimation or just an excuse to say I am like that, or they find it to be too much of a determination. But I don't think of it that way, because we talked about that before we started the recording, is that you have the choice and you have the possibility to transcend those things, right? To know that you might inherit certain qualities, but this is also what most people get wrong about karma. It's not something that is written down, and it's more about like karma translate as action, right? So mm-hmm. your actions determine every step of the way. And I think this is why yoga in relation to Jyotish and in relation to Ayurveda, it's such a complete practice, because it gives us the tools to transcend our nature, to go beyond and to live our true full potential, not just the body type.
Yeah. Very well said. That's very beautiful. And that's exactly it. There's so many kinds of karmas. Jyotish is also often referred to as the science of karma, the science of time, consciousness unfolding in chronological order. I think that, you know, not only are there the four types of karma, the past karma that we can't do anything about, the past karma that we can do something about, the present karma, the future karma, but there's also the karmas of the individual karma, the family karma, the national karma, the collective karma. And I also feel that there are many people alive today, at least that I know, probably that you know, who are, I want to be careful in terms of, and I know this is not something that you do or would do, but just in terms of people listening, that I always say that it's great to learn about Ayurveda, and especially Jyotish, because it helps you learn about your karma. But hopefully it helps you learn in a way where you're not blaming yourself. Mm-hmm. We're not blaming you. But we're inviting you to take responsibility to grow from it. And that goes back to the topic of suffering, which we were talking about earlier, which is to say, I think that oftentimes when we're faced with a really stunning, sudden upheaval or something that really, some sort of an injury, something that really causes great suffering, it's not to say that we just let it go or we just, oh, you should just learn from it. I think part of the process is to feel it. We wouldn't have become humans. Consciousness could become anything. Why did consciousness choose to become you as a human being? It's so that you will feel. And feel human emotion, feel human life. I really believe that part of our growth here is to feel what it is to be human. And that's to feel love and to feel loss, right? Mm. To feel joy and to feel heartache, to feel connection and sometimes to feel loneliness. I mean, to feel it all. Part of that human condition is what brings us back to one another. And ultimately, I think that's what we're here to really learn, is that we belong to each other. We belong to this, our Mother Earth, Mother Nature. We belong to this world. If Mother Nature, we all share this world. So if she's our mother, then we must all be a family, brothers and sisters. And we're here to take care of each other. And sometimes it is through suffering. It is through feeling the feelings. Before we go looking for the lesson, just to be with it, to sit with it, to have the courage. A strong Mars will give you the courage. A strong Saturn will give you the discipline to sit in the mess and to not try to change it or fix it, but just to feel what it feels like to be a human. I mean, if you think about, like, life has been around for how many millions of years? We have this one split second of time, whether it's a day or a week or a month, to sit in it. It will pass, as all things do, because the one thing that both Jyotish and Ayurveda teach us is that the only constant is change. Mm-hmm. Everything in nature is constantly changing. And so to sit in it is to actually connect to our own non-changing nature, our own unchanging nature within, that's got the capacity to sit in that mess, to sit even in that pain. Because pain and suffering are two different things, but to sit in the pain and not make a story about it, not try to run from it, not try to fix it, not try to intellectualize it, not try to even understand it. Those of us with strong Sagittarius in our chart, we want to understand it, right? We want to see the pattern, that pattern fits into that. But just feel it. And then sometimes even the lesson is just that.
Yeah,
I had the experience of that suffering so that next year when somebody comes to me with that same thing, I can sit with her. I can sit with him while they sit for whatever length of time it takes to just be in their own mess, but they don't have to be alone with it. You know, why have we come alive? I think sometimes we look for these lofty reasons. I've come alive because I've got a mission to bring Ayurveda to every living being everywhere. That's a great mission. And if you have that mission, I join you in that. But I think in many ways we're alive sometimes maybe we're just alive to feel human emotion.
Yeah.
Or maybe we're alive to help an old lady walk across the street.
Yes.
Or to smile at somebody at just the moment when they needed that smile.
Now I have to say amen, because it is so important. It puts so much pressure on people to find their purpose in life, right? Like just to bring Ayurveda to everyone. No, maybe you're just here to sit out your mom's karma or your family's karma for whatever. And that's a great purpose. It's you know, to bring healing to a family lineage that has been suffering for generations after generations and after generations. And we don't acknowledge that or give ourselves the permission to do so.
Yeah. We need a lot more forgiveness.
Yeah.
For ourselves especially. To forgive ourselves and realize exactly what you said. Maybe, and in fact, in Jyotish, you can also see that some of the most evolved souls are not in positions of fame or leadership or great wealth. Oftentimes, they're your everyday person. They're your neighbor. They're the assistant at the job, because they don't have an ego. They're not looking for recognition, but they bring peace, or they bring joy, or they bring healing, or they bring nourishment. They bring something. And they make a difference.
Yeah.
They move the needle.
Yeah.
And that's what counts. Yeah.
And I think just from how you see things and how you put things into perspective, it's so important for a Jyotish astrologer to bring these qualities that you have, I feel, because you can be very accomplished in Vedic science. But to, like, how to interpret that when it comes to an individual and how to transmit that message, right? It's so important. And maybe you can just elaborate a little bit on that one, how we approach people and their lives, because it's pretty intimate, right? To get an insight into a persona in that way, and a great responsibility, right, to deliver that message.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to discourage young people, but a friend of mine was a student of Kabbalah. He said that there's some saying there that says that you can't be a teacher of this mystic knowledge until you're 40. I think it's 40. It might be 45. They feel that you need to have life experience so that it isn't just book knowledge. That's one thing, I think, to have life experience. I think, you know, compassion comes from having experienced it. But the other thing, of course, is one of my teachers, a great teacher of mine, whose name is Jeffrey Armstrong. People can visit his website. It's just jeffreyarmstrong.com. He's a teacher of Vedanta, the philosophy that corresponds to all this, that comes out of the Vedas. And he has said, we really should start there. We should know the philosophy before we know Jyotish. We should know the philosophy of wholeness. We should know the philosophy of Sanatana Dharma. We should know the philosophy, I think, of Vasudeva Kutumbakam, which is, you know, we are all one family. That to know those, to have a meditation practice, to be able to be fully present to yourself and your life so that you can be present to others and really listen. I think those are really important steps. The more that you can be very grounded in presence and very awake to the aliveness of the world and the unity of all existence, the more that you can bring that perspective. Get back to where we started. One of the first things you said is it's all about perspective. So it's about bringing that perspective to people. Above all, so they can see that they are part of a larger whole, and that their life is part of a larger continuum. Think of your life as a river. And upriver maybe is your parents and your grandparents, right? And now you're this part of the river and all of it's going to flow to the ocean. We're part of, you know, our life is the river and it's flowing. And so it's really, I find that's what's so important about Jyotish, and that's what I try to do. I try to bring people a little help in understanding what they're going through and how they can maximize the gifts that they were born with. It's not to minimize the challenge, but to actually just to be in the mess with them and to show them that, well, maybe the way out is going to be over here. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the way out is sitting a little bit longer. Or maybe just to give them a sense that this is only going to last another week or month or year. I talked to somebody recently and I said, this is going to be about another 18 months, but it's been a 19-year period, right? She's in the Saturn dasha. And so she said, oh my gosh, another year and a half. And I said, well, isn't that good considering that it's been, you know, it's almost over. And at first it was, oh, I don't think I can do this. She's so tired. But then knowing that there is an end and it is in sight was also very helpful. So it's perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Said. And talking about sitting in the chaos, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the corona times we are going through. I feel like everybody's talking about it so much, but maybe just to put it a little bit more into perspective from the astrological point of view.
Mm-hmm. So thinking of the planets as symbols and reflections, maybe rather than causes, what we have going on right now is these nodes, the lunar nodes, they're called in Jyotish Rahu and Ketu. And they, in Western astrology, are called the North and South Nodes. They're not planets, they're shadows. They cause the eclipses, the solar and lunar eclipse. They're mathematical points in the sky where the sun, moon, and earth line up. So right now, Rahu, which is said to be the head, Rahu is said to be a demon. The head is Rahu and the body tail is Ketu. And this demon, Rahu, the head of this Rakshasa, it's called, is in Gemini, which is an air sign. Rahu relates to volatility, chaos, disruption, unpredictability, mysteries, secrets, shadows. But he can also relate to viruses, infections, sudden and invisible illness. And he's in an air sign. So that's the sense of scattering, the wind blowing it about, blowing it maybe everywhere. Who knows where next? That unpredictability of an air sign or Vata. Inside Gemini, he's in a nakshatra, another difference between Jyotish and Western. We have the Dasha period, the Mahadasha period I was just referencing. And then we also have the nakshatras. We have divisional charts. I mean, there's so many aspects to Jyotish and complexities that give us a deeper dive and a deeper, closer look at a person and their chart and their unfolding. But the nakshatras, there's 27 nakshatras. So while there's only 12 signs, there's 27 nakshatras. It gives us a lot more detail. Inside Gemini sits Ardra nakshatra. Ardra is one of the name of Rudra. Rudra is the fierce aspect of Shiva. And Ardra means a teardrop. It means the tears that come from the suffering of the fierce winds of destruction. That's where Rahu is right now, for the whole world. On the other side of the sky is Ketu, the south node or the tail of this dragon. And Ketu, Rahu is very materialistic. He's very hungry. He's ahead. There's no body to hold what he eats. So he's always hungry, hungry, hungry. And it's that restlessness. It's that eating up and chewing up on things. Whereas Ketu is the opposite. Ketu being the tail, he represents what's behind. He can represent past conditioning. He can represent past karma. He also is the opposite of the materialistic Rahu. Excuse me. It's springtime here and I have some allergies. Excuse me. Ketu represents, in a better way, Ketu represents the yogi who leaves the material world behind, goes up into the mountains and sits in the caves and cultivates that inner fire, that inner power, that inner strength. But he's anti-materialistic in that sense. And he's also invisible. He's hidden in a cave. He's hidden away. He represents a constricting, narrowing energy. And he right now is in Sagittarius, in Mula Nakshatra. Mula is roots. It's a tangle of roots. Again, it relates to what's hidden, what's underneath, what's buried, what we can't see. So between the two of them, these two nodes that cause eclipses, the last time we saw them exactly where they are now, we had the 9/11 situation in the United States. They can cause major disruption. The issue now is that since they went into Gemini and Ketu respectively, which was March 27th in the West of 2019, they have been with Saturn. And then in May of last year, they were joined with Mars. So you had all four of the great malefics. Saturn and Mars are considered malefics. The nodes are considered malefics. You had the malefics empowering each other and across the sky battling each other. So last summer was difficult. We had very difficult patterns going on in the sky. And then we got some ease in the autumn. Then we had the great eclipse on December 25th. Here and in Australia, India, that was December 26th. And that we had almost all the planets lined up together. And just FYI, I have never looked at Germany's chart. I should look at it. But the United States has Sagittarius rising, Sun in Gemini. So this is happening big time to the United States, as we're now seeing. It began in China. China has Capricorn rising. Saturn just moved into Capricorn. But was, when this started, in the 12th house of hospitalization, illness, loss. Saturn crossing the 12th house can be very challenging. That's where it was. And it was in the 12th house with Ketu, right? Saturn's now left, and Saturn is no longer in Sagittarius with Ketu, empowering them. For we know, all know Saturn can be depleting, can cause illness, he can be very weak, we don't have the strength to ourselves countenance this energy. But so now Saturn's left, you'd think things should get better because Jupiter's gone in. Now Jupiter's with Ketu, aspecting Rahu, you'd think, oh, Jupiter's the most benefic of planets. Everything should be fine now. Instead, Jupiter is expansive. Jupiter, we will describe Jupiter as being global or universal. But what's he done? He took this illness from China and spread it around the world. So the best news of all is that at the end of March, 29th here and on the 30th in India and Australia, Jupiter moved also to join Saturn in Capricorn. So the good news for now is that there's no other planet empowering these two nodes. And that's very significant. The second piece is that Saturn's strong in dignity in Capricorn. He's joined Mars, who's exalted in Capricorn. And Jupiter, who's normally debilitated in Capricorn, is now Nietzsche Bhanga, which means the debilitation is canceled because he's with those strong planets. We now have Venus in Taurus, very strong, who's unifying the forces. I don't know how it's gone in other countries, but in our country, there's been no unity of leadership. So we haven't really been able to get on top of this crisis. Now Venus in Taurus is helping bring people together to work together. There's more love, harmony, unity. Mars in Capricorn should give us, of course, Mars can relate to fever and infection and accidents and disruptions as well. But when he's exalted, it brings out the best. And that's going to bring on focus and strength to fight this. And so I think we're going to see, and then Sun is going into Aries where he's exalted April 13th. I think mid to late April, we're going to start to see us get some forward movement. I think we'll see that until late May, late June. I think we'll have another blip. I think we'll see another recurrence in late summer because Jupiter's going back. He's retrograding back to Sagittarius. Until September 27th, when the nodes move, Rahu's going to be moving to Taurus and Ketu's moving to Scorpio. And they are exalted there. And remember, same thing I just said about exaltation. What exaltation means is it brings out the best, even in shadow or malefic planets. When they're in their place of exaltation, it brings out the best in them. So they will not be empowered by Saturn or Jupiter. They will be in node places of exaltation. I think by October, November, we're going to start to see some return to normality. Of course, then Jupiter's going back into Capricorn in December. So I think we should all keep our money. Let's not all go spending wildly. I think everyone wants to keep your money. Be careful or just watch your expenses, because when Jupiter goes back into Capricorn, we may all be working to rebuild our economies. Hopefully all of this gives us an opportunity to restore dharmic living. And that's what I would really say to all people everywhere. The fact that this has given us a chance to come home, to stay at home, to cook at home, to live with more quietude, more stillness, to find our own ways of entertaining ourselves, to work on harmony amongst the family or whoever we're at home with. This is very important for us. And I hope that we can all have a vision and intention that as we come out of this, we come out of it with more of this, that we hold on to the harmony and the quietness and the stillness, that we work together to really restore Dharma to the world, to live more in harmony with nature and in peace with one another. And it's up to us. It's up to us to do it and to hold the vision for it and not allow other forces to exploit this time for their own purposes.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Thank you for the beautiful outlook on the year 2020 and what to expect. And just, putting it into perspective again by saying it's not the chaos. So often we only see the chaos and we don't see that people or that things are getting restored, that it's getting restored back into balance, right?
Yeah, beautiful.
Wow. Laura, thank you so much. There was so much wisdom. I could just like talk with you forever. For the listeners, if you had some tips for people, whether they love to get their chart read or read it themselves, or they know their rising sign, for example. Do you have any tips how to get touch with the Jyotish, or what you could do according to your chart? Is there anything that the readers, the listeners could take away from it?
If you want to go to my website, lauraplum.com, I have a page there. It's /Jyotish, Jyotish, where you'll find it from the homepage. I have a number of resources on that page, obviously for free, including, if you scroll down, some books, a list of books. A lot of people ask me for that. And they're good basic books to get started. I was reading Jyotish books. I feel like I've read every Jyotish book ever written. And I probably was reading and learning about Jyotish for 15 or maybe more years before one of my teachers came along and looked at my chart and said, "Why aren't you doing this? You should be doing this." And I remember just feeling like, "Oh, really?" Like some caged bird just went flying out of my heart. You know, but that's, I say that because that's the joy. It's a joy to read these books and to learn about it. And because it just reading about it and learning about it can just open your heart and expand your mind so much. There's other resources there as well. There's a few videos that talk about this wobble of the earth. And there's a video of the solar system and our sun traveling around another sun. And so that speaks to the yugas that we refer to in the sense of timing. So, you know, astrophysicists and cosmologists are affirming what these great sages knew by watching with their own naked eye. So that's a tool for people, is to consider just paying attention. Pay attention to nature. Pay attention to the forces upon you. Notice how you feel. I had a hard time falling asleep last night. One of the things that was interesting for me was to look up, where is the moon? What was going on there? And sometimes I do, you know, it's just interesting to notice how the moon's motions can affect us in terms of our day-to-day patterns as well as our emotions. Mm-hmm. And then there's some free sites there. I don't belong to any of them, but or work with any of them, but one that I used before I got my own software was astroved.com. You can run free charts there. Another one is Cosmic Insight is a great app that I use on my phone. I don't know these people. I don't get any kickback. But I would say that Cosmic Insight is great, but complex. And they seem to make it more and more complex as they go. And they also seem to do this thing where as soon as you get used to working with one feature, they'll sort of pull it away and now they charge for it. But still, you can run charts there. The problem is, I would say to people, the important caution is, if you don't know anything about Jyotish and you look up your chart, and let's say you have, I don't know, Saturn in Aries or Moon in Scorpio, Mars in Cancer, you might see that you have a debilitated planet, or you might see that you might think that rising sign where it says 11, you might think that's the 11th house when 11 actually means Aquarius. You need some basic understanding. Yeah. And Dr. Google is not it.
Yeah.
Google will tell you, oh, it's terrible that you have Saturn in Aries. You're going to always be miserable. But that may not be true. It might be a cancellation.
Yeah.
Jupiter in Capricorn. Like right now, we've got Jupiter in Capricorn. But that debilitation is canceled for very many reasons. And that's going to make Jupiter even stronger. Challenge at first, but strength that comes from it. So it's important, before you come to make assumptions about your own chart, I think it's important that you get somebody to look at it and understand the complexities that underlie it. And above all, what you said, what she said, that nothing's fixed in stone.
Yeah.
These are patterns of energy. And if we are consciousness itself, then the consciousness is the creator of those patterns of energy. align with consciousness and you align with the creative power to dissolve and to create and recreate, to generate and to regenerate. And mantra, the mind, manas, tra projected into the one mind. That's why mantra is the most important remedy we have in Jyotish, to dissolve the karmas, to dissolve the mental patterns of suffering, and to rebuild a mind that is luminous and that can experience all the challenges of life and not be thrown off course. So yeah. Remember that even if you have a chart that seems challenging, you know, what we look at when we want to see who's going to win the next election for national leadership, prime minister, president, etc., we look at who's got the most challenged chart. They're likely the one who's going to win. Other things we look at too. But the challenges in the chart, as you said earlier, can really make a person strong. And that can give leadership. So just not to make assumptions, not to use the Vedic sciences in vain or against yourself, but only as tools for expansion and upliftment. And to grow your yoga, which is to grow your self-realization and to realize your true nature, that is eternal and infinite.
Beautiful. And people can book consultations with you, right? Where do they find you?
Again, lauraplum.com. It's all there. Perfect. It's all there.
I'm going to link that in the show notes. And you also have a beautiful Instagram account where you share insights, and I'm going to put that in the show notes too.
Thank you. I do share a lot on Instagram. So if people want more regular updates, what's going on with the moon, what's going on now in these days, Ayurveda, different things I like to put there just to try to help people take some deep breaths, and we're going to get through this. We're going to get through this together.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Laura, for your time, for the wisdom. Yeah. Everything you express in this world. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for, I'm thinking it takes one to know one. Thanks for being such a beautiful soul, a beautiful human. Thank you for all the work that you do and all the healing you bring to the world and enlightenment through your podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Been wonderful.
I'm so happy Laura gave us her time for this interview because she's such an amazing and knowledgeable human being. I really hope you enjoyed this interview and that you could take a lot of knowledge from this interview, and I will be happy if you would leave a comment on Instagram or Facebook. You can find me there and follow me there at Dania Schumann on Instagram and Dr. Dania Schumann on Facebook. And you can also subscribe to this podcast, The Science of Life. I would be really happy if you also leave a review. And you can find me on my website, which is daniaschumann.com. You get more information about the upcoming training to be an Ayurvedic nutrition counselor, which will start in October again. And you can subscribe to my newsletter there. And in May, a special project of mine finally goes online, which will be a community about Ayurveda, yoga, nutrition, personal development. So you get the chance to get a membership, to be in a group with like-minded people, and to get input about all these topics, to get support with all your questions around health and Ayurveda and yoga. And I really hope to see you there, so stay tuned. I will release further information through my newsletter and also through Instagram and Facebook. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I wish you all the best. Stay healthy, and namaste.